Okay, thank you very much, Jim, for the introduction, and thank you, organizers of this meeting. Well, it just has a long time delay. So thank you for inviting me to this meeting. I will be talking about mostly numerical work on relativistic collisionless magnetic reconnection with a focus, a specific focus on non-thermal particle acceleration. And most of this work is done with Greg Werner, or by Greg Werner, who is here. Okay. Now, before I begin, let me briefly say what is it that we are trying to do here. So our goal is to understand the physical mechanisms of non-thermal particle acceleration, and in particular, and also characterize it quantitatively in terms of a Pauli slope and a cutoff, a high energy cutoff. So for us, non-thermal particle acceleration means creation of extended Pauli energy distribution functions. And the thing is that we want to characterize these parameters, P and gamma C, sometimes I will call this P alpha, as a function of various input parameters. So there is some black box, which will be like a peak simulation. There are some system parameters, and out go the Pauli index and the cutoff. And the reason for doing this is that we want to provide a usable, perhaps simple empirical prescription that people who do spectral modeling, maybe of various astrophysical systems and space physics systems, so a model that they could just plug into the MHD simulations, for example. Now, the tools that we will be using are primarily particle and cell simulations with a little snippets of analytical theory, as you will see. Now, this program overall is quite challenging, and the reason for this is that the parameter space, the conceivable parameter space that we want to explore, is actually quite large, very much multidimensional. So some of the key classes of parameters that form this parameter space are listed here. So one of them is the fundamental one, that is dimensionality. Is it 2D or 3D? Then there is plasma composition. We will be talking about a reconnection in pair plasmas, reconnection in electron-ion plasmas, and sometimes people study mixed plasmas, where there is both pairs and electrons and ions. There are all kinds of other things like boundary conditions, the guide magnetic field that was described in previous talks. And also, since we're talking about relativistic particle acceleration and relativistic reconnection, an important parameter will be the sigma. I will describe it later, which tells us how relativistic the process is. We can study, we could go into ultra-relativistic regime, we can study semi-relativistic or non-relativistic. So there is a whole sequence of regimes that, you know, one needs to cover sooner or later somehow, right? And finally, in principle, there is extra physics that is has not got too much attention in space physics community or in laboratory plasma community. But in some astrophysical systems, the basic parameters of the basic physical conditions are such that one needs to think about the effects of radiation reaction, for example, or pair creation. So these are some of the exotic physical parameters or physical regimes that are being investigated now. All right. Now, so in this talk, I will focus on just a small subset of all this huge parameter space. And basically, we'll talk about four things. The first one is ultra-relativistic reconnection in pair plasmas in 2D. And I will say a little bit about the case with radiation reaction. Then I'll talk about electron-ion plasma, also in 2D. And I will focus on the semi-relativistic regime, where ions are non-relativistic, but electrons are ultra-relativistic. And then I will move on to 3D. So the most interesting and exciting stuff will be towards the end, if we get there, actually. And this is the current frontier. And actually, I would like to thank the previous two speakers, Bill and Mark, for giving such excellent talks, really highlighting the deep things, so, you know, deep problems and deep issues that we are now not struggling with. What's the right way to put it? I don't know. But,
trying to
understand. But these are indeed deep and good things, and you'll see there will be connections again in the second half of the talk with all of this. All right, now before we begin, let me say a few words about this magnetization parameter, sigma. Broadly speaking, we think that the physical regime of, let's say, reconnection in this case, or some other plasma processes, some other fundamental plasma process, is governed by the ambient plasma parameters, such as density, you know, temperature. In the case of reconnection, these are upstream of the reconnection layer, the ambient parameters, magnetic field and guide field, right? And from this one can form various dimensionless numbers, and in particular, an important dimensionless number in relativistic plasma physics is this quantity called sigma. It's called magnetization. But I want to spend a few moments on this because it comes in two flavors. There are two kinds of sigma we're talking about. One is cold sigma and the other one is hot sigma. And let me define what these things are. So the cold sigma is defined by this expression. It's the upstream magnetic field divided by the number of particles times mc squared. Okay. And the importance of it is that you can see it's basically magnetic energy density divided by the number of particles and divided by the rest mass energy. So it's the characteristic energy available per particle. This sets the overall energy scale for particle acceleration, the basic energy scale. The second parameter is the hot sigma, which is somewhat different. It's the same b naught squared over 4 pi, which is the enthalpy of the magnetic field, but divided by the plasma enthalpy. And the plasma enthalpy here is the relativistic enthalpy, or enthalpy density. It includes the rest mass. And it's important because it is this parameter that sets how relativistic the plasma motions are once you excite them. It sets delta n speed. If this parameter is large, if you have strong magnetization, delta n speed approaches the speed of light. And if it is low, then the delta n speed goes as square root of sigma, becomes the usual non-relativistic thing, right? So there are these two limits. If you have relativistically cold plasma, temperature much less than the mc squared, then these two definitions are the same because the enthalpy is controlled by the rest mass, right? And then there is no distinction between them. However, you may also be interested in ultra-relativistically hot plasma, in which case the rest mass energy density here is negligible, and what's important is the ultra-relativistic pressure and ultra-relativistic internal energy. They control the enthalpy, and through that they control the delta n speed, and they control this sigma h. And in this case, sigma h is basically 1 over plasma beta with a numerical prefactor. Okay, so that sort of defines some important parameters. All right, now let me move on to describe the simulations that we and others have done, and we'll start with two-dimensional pair plasma, the simplest case, right, in the relativistic limit. Okay, so there has been important early pioneering work by Hoshino-san in particular, really who started this whole field, and some other people later on who've done first peak simulations of this problem. But in the past few years, and I used to say a couple of years, now it's a few years, so it's basically 5 years, since 2014, there were three groups who started working on this problem very actively and aggressively and basically producing important results, which are by and large consistent with each other. So these are Sironi, Spitkovsky at Columbia, Princeton, Guo with Lee and Bill Doughton at Los Alamos, and us at Colorado, Greg Werner, and myself and other people. Right, so the upshot from all of these studies is that, as previous speakers have noted earlier today, in the relativistic case, reconnection is a viable and powerful particle accelerator. Collisionless relativistic reconnection in pair plasmas produces very robust power laws, extended power laws, and some of them are very hard. So then the question is, how do the characteristics of this power law, such as the power law index, alpha or p, and the high energy cutoff depend on various parameters of the system? Okay, so let me first describe what was found as far as the Pauli index is concerned, right? So we can write the distribution function as gamma to power minus alpha. First of all, and this is for the case without guide field, first of all, there is convergence with system size. So if you go to larger and larger system sizes, this alpha converges to some value. And then this value, turns out, depends on sigma. Now, these studies, I think probably all three of them, the early studies, were done in the cold upstream plasma. So in this case, the hot sigma and cold sigma are the same. So, but I think actually what matters here is the hot sigma, just in general. Now, so what happens is that this Pauli index decreases with sigma. So if you go in the ultra-relativistic regime, sigma much larger than 1, the Pauli index decreases and approaches something that is maybe 1 or maybe slightly higher than 1. And then if you go to less relativistic regime, then you get steeper and steeper spectra, right? So reconnection is the most efficient when you're in the ultra-relativistic regime. Okay. Now let me say a few more words about the high energy cutoff, because we are not only interested in the Pauli index, but we're also interested in how far it extends in energy, right? What is the high energy cutoff? So in this study, which I think was like the first study that tried to systematically look into this question, we saw that we found two cutoffs that are competing with each other. They're basically, you know, multiplying gamma C1 and gamma C2. And depending on the regime, one of them dominates. Now, the first one, or rather the second one, gamma C2, is very easy to understand. It has to do with just limited system size. It just corresponds to the maximum voltage drop corresponding to the system size. So one can evaluate it simply by taking the characteristic reconnection electric field, which for relativistic reconnection is 1/10 of the magnetic field, and take the system size, right? This is what we call extreme acceleration or Hillis acceleration. So the result is that it's gamma C2 is 1/10 of the system size divided by the nominal Larmor radius, which is mc squared over eb0. Okay, so that's one of them, and that's sort of straightforward. But the other one was more surprising, and it's independent of the system size, and instead it scales with sigma. So it basically scales with the characteristic average energy per particle. But it is not equal to the average energy per particle, right? Otherwise, we wouldn't have a power law. It's about, so in this study, it was roughly speaking 10 times the average energy, or 4 sigma. And what it means is that in the astrophysically relevant limit of larger and larger system sizes, the power law extends to higher and higher energies, but then it sort of saturates, or at least starts going more slowly. One can see this here. So these are spectra corresponding to different system sizes. And you can see that as the system size increase, they increase, but then they sort of stagnate, right? Okay. And the interplay or comparison or competition between these two cutoffs helps us define what we mean by large system regime. Large system regime means that L over rho naught, or dimensionless system size, is larger than 40 times sigma in this case. Okay. So we want to be in this large system regime. Now, one can actually try to understand where this comes from, and it comes from the following reasoning, where the cutoff comes from. It's simply due to the fact that particles get accelerated in these reconnection layers and get trapped in plasmoids, in 2D, right? So we have, of course, in large systems, we have this hierarchy of plasmoids and interplasmoid current layers. They go to smaller and smaller scales. The smallest scales that are available are scales that correspond to marginally stable to Turing instability layers. Okay, what it means is that these layers will have characteristic thickness, which is just set by the characteristic Larmor radius of the average particles. That's how sigma comes in. Let's see, that's the layer thickness, typically. And then they have some aspect ratio, maybe a few tens, like this. And the cutoff corresponds now not to the entire system length, but just to this system length, which is, you know, the length of these elementary layers, current layers. And if you put this all together, you get something like, you know, a few times sigma. Now, I have to say that it doesn't mean that there is no further acceleration available, but just that this is the fastest acceleration. So system, particles quickly establish a power law up to that limit. And then what happens is something else, and it's another stage. And this has been investigated by Maria Petropoulou and Lorenzo Sironi recently in last year. So they've done simulation of, again, 2D periplasma reconnection with very, very large system sizes. What they see is that the cutoff quickly reaches about this level of, let's say, 4 sigma, and then instead of rising linearly, it slows down and rises more slowly. They are saying that it goes as square root of time. And so the reason for this, according to them, is that even though the particles are trapped within plasmoids, they still can get further energy because the plasmoids are growing on the outside. The inner core of the plasmoids contracts. And as it contracts, the magnetic field increases and the length of them decreases, and the adiabatic moment conservation leads to energy gain for these particles. All right. But that's an interesting sort of area of research. Now, let me switch on, move on to the next topic. Just very briefly, I want to mention that even though the absolute majority of all these studies is done for non-relativistic, non-radiative reconnection in periplasmas or electron ion plasmas, we now also see studies of reconnection with radiation reaction, for example. So that's one of the examples of a paper that we did last year with Greg Werner and Sasha Filipov, where there is inverse Compton or IC cooling applied to the particles. And what you see is that it has an effect, of course, on particle acceleration. In particular, if the cooling is very weak, you get regular slopes here. But if you start turning on radiative cooling, you get double power laws in, at some intermediate values. And then at very strong cooling, you just have a steeper power law. But the point here is not the specific power laws, but just to tell you that these studies are now possible and being done. And furthermore, we now are also doing studies that include pair production on top of all of that. Okay, now let me move on to relativistic reconnection and semi-relativistic reconnection in electron-ion plasmas, but still in two dimensions. So this regime is very important for black hole accretion disks, the corona of accretion disks, jets, and radiatively inefficient accretion flows, maybe in the context of M87, for example. All right, so when we talk about electrons and ions, right, the first thing to note is that if you neglect radiative effects, and if you are in the ultra-relativistic regime, where both electrons and ions are ultra-relativistic, then there is no difference between ions and positrons. So in this case, everything becomes the same as in the periplasma case. But the most interesting regime is, therefore, the semi-relativistic regime. This is a regime where your average magnetic energy per particle is much higher than the rest mass energy of electrons, but much less than the rest mass energy of ions. So ions are non-relativistic, but electrons are relativistic. And we've been investigating this regime with Greg Werner again. And here is what we found. Okay, so first we found that reconnection rate, not surprisingly, or maybe surprisingly, remains the same as always, 1/10, if you normalize it properly to the alpha n speed. But one of the most interesting and important, practically important outcomes of this study is characterization of the electron to ion heating ratio. What fraction of the dissipated magnetic energy goes to electrons and what fraction goes to ions? It's a question of practical importance. So we've done a study with a range of the sigma I, so these are sigmas relative for ions. And what we found is that, of course, in the ultra-relativistic regime, as advertised, they behave in the same way and they get 50-50. But if you go into the semi-relativistic regime, ions get more energy, electrons get less energy. But that sort of ratio saturates at something like 1:3 somehow, which is, by the way, consistent with what people find in non-relativistic reconnection regime. Now, as far as the non-thermal particle acceleration is concerned, in this study we saw that we couldn't really get reliable ion acceleration. So the ions here are this dashed green line, but electrons certainly show non-thermal segments in their particle distribution function. And one can characterize the power law slope of the electrons as function of sigma I. You see this value, and also the high energy cutoff. And it turns out that these values that we've seen here are well described by this simple empirical fit, simple empirical formula. So the electron index goes as a constant plus another constant of order unity divided by the hot sigma to minus 1/2 power. And it's an example of a concrete, simple prescription that can be taken from peak simulations and plug into spectral modeling, for example. And other people, including Ball, have extended these studies to include dependence on plasma beta and other things. Now, if you add, so the previous slide was without guide field. If you add guide field, we see that the guide field does change the electron heating ratio, electron to ion heating ratio, which is shown here. In particular, if you have, if you increase guide field, the electron heating fraction increases from about a quarter to, you know, being much larger than ions. So strong guide field promotes electron heating. And this is done for a fixed sigma I, 1/10. Now, the effect of guide field on non-thermal particle acceleration is as follows. For electrons, it's not really strong. At least that's what we saw here. For ions, it is strong. So, you know, ions heating, and you can actually see it here, right? The ion heating fraction decreases with guide field. You can see it in the spectra also, right? So ion energization is suppressed by guide field. Now, going back to the electrons, an interesting twist here, and this is what Mark showed earlier. If you start increasing guide field, the dependence of the electron spectra on guide field is non-monotonic. It rises, actually, at first, and then it declines. So ultimately, strong magnetic field suppresses electron non-thermal particle acceleration, but there is an intermediate range of values where it's optimal. Now, okay, the fundamental physics question is, how do we understand the scaling of the electron power law index, for example, on sigma? And I have a sort of theory here. I think it could be understood relatively simply if one adopts this point of view that was described previously, from, you know, starting with Shibata and Tanuma, that in large systems, reconnection proceeds in 2D at least, right? We are still talking about 2D. Reconnection proceeds through this hierarchy of plasmoids or magnetic islands, and this happens both in MHD and in relativistic peak simulations. And the system is self-similar, and it's important. It means that on each scale, it looks the same, right? What this means is that when we think about particle acceleration somewhere already in the non-thermal range, that particle will have some Larmor radius, let's say, right? The Larmor radius on this scale will be small, relatively small, but if you blow up this thing and look at it in a microscope, then the Larmor radius would be comparable to the size of these plasmoids. If you blow it up even more, it will be larger, right? So what it means is that when we think about particle acceleration, we really need to think about fields, like electric field in particular, magnetic fields, not in some absolute sense, but on the scale that is relevant to the given particle, that is, on the scale dictated by the Larmor radius of this particle. And it's an energy-dependent reasoning, energy-dependent scale. And then the basic picture is that, again, if you're looking at these very energetic particles, that these particles are blind to small-scale magnetic structures, to plasmoids with the sizes much smaller than the Larmor radius. They only interact strongly with plasmoids that are comparable to the Larmor radius or larger, right? They can be trapped in these plasmoids. And essentially, what happens is that a particle gets accelerated by this, by the reconnection electric field, which is just this. It's essentially a constant. It's a constant. It's 1/10 of, alphanic value. And it gets accelerated by this field until it gets magnetized by the reconnected magnetic field, which can either happen in interplasmoid current layers at a given scale or in plasmoids where the field is stronger. And my argument here is that this first process dictates the Paolo index, and the second dictates the escape, the cutoff. Okay, so I guess I'll skip that. So if you have any question, I'll be able to talk about this offline maybe later. But just basically, quickly, the magnetization timescale, the time it takes a particle to get magnetized by the reconnected magnetic field, is simply the light travel time over the distance that is comparable to the Larmor radius of this particle in that reconnected magnetic field. And that's proportional to the particle energy. The acceleration is independent of particle energy. The acceleration, gamma dot, right, the acceleration rate, is just the electric field. It doesn't depend on the particle energy. If you set these two things equal to each other, you will immediately recover a Paolo distribution with a Paolo index that simply goes as one over plasma of alphanic beta, which is the, you know, the Alphen velocity divided by the speed of light. And that's how you get the square root of sigma. So if you, in the ultra-relativistic regime, this is of order one, so you get a constant, and happens to be of close to one. In the sub-relativistic regime, in the semi-relativistic regime, for example, it goes as one over square root of sigma. So I think that's what fundamentally happens here. Okay, now in the last few minutes, let me move into 3D reconnection, and I'll talk about periplasma exclusively. This is work done by, again, Greg Werner in the last couple of years. And there are two parts here. The first one is ultra-relativistic regime. Oh, okay, first let me say, why would we even care about 3D reconnection? This is the question that Bill asked that I would be concerned with. A priori, we might be interested in this for the following reason, that long current layers are subject not only to Turing instability, which is associated with the reconnection process, but also to the Drift-Kink instability that develops in the third dimension. And there is a question of whether that instability interferes with particle acceleration. So that's the motivation for studying it. All right. So first, in the ultra-relativistic pair case, which is shown here, we investigated this problem by directly comparing 2D and 3D simulations. And when I say 3D, it's really not a bimodal distribution, but there is a continuous parameter that connects 2D and 3D, and this is just the aspect ratio LZ over LX. So it's LZ is the direction along the guide field. But then we're also interested in the effects of the guide field. So that's there are two parameters being studied here. All right, and everything else is fixed. Okay, so here is what we found. So I'll go through this very quickly. First of all, the box size dependence. So we see that the particle spectra are converged with the box size. The Paolo index in particular, right, you can see here, is converged, which is nice. The three-dimensionality, that's this ratio, LZ over LX. So what we see here is that in this ultra-relativistic case, the energetics of the process, this is magnetic energy as a function of time, and the spectra seem to be unaffected by 3D effects, or at least very mildly affected. All of these lines, they are basically on top of each other, and they correspond to different ratios of LZ over LX, right, without guide field. So the NTPA, non-thermal particle acceleration, is similar in the 2D and 3D cases. Now, one may ask, what happens if we turn on guide field? Will that conclusion change? What we saw is that it doesn't change. So for different values of guide field, 0, 1 quarter, and 1, relative to the reconnected field, we see the same story that the spectra all look very similar, independent of LZ over LX. Okay, so that seems to be a very compelling lesson here. And this, of course, implies that if you're only interested in particle acceleration, then actually you don't care about 3D. And doing 2D, which, as Bill said, is 1,000 times less expensive, is sufficient. Or is it? I mean, right? Let's see. That's not the full story, though. But now, However, so before we go to this in more detail, let me just say one more thing about this ultra-relativistic case. Okay, in the ultra-relativistic case, whereas three-dimensionality does not affect spectra very much, the guide field does. And the strong guide field suppresses, has very remarkable influence on particle acceleration. It suppresses the energy budget of the system. If you have guide field, you are less able to tap into even non-guide field magnetic energy. It suppresses the power law, the steepness of the slopes, and it suppresses the cutoff of the power law segment of the distribution function. All right. Okay, now, however, this was for ultra-relativistic case. Now we are doing, so all of this is now going to be work in progress that we're doing right now, but it's very exciting and very much connects with what previous speakers talked about. The situation is actually very different in the case of trans-relativistic pair plasma, where plasma is relativistically hot, but sigma h is of order 1. So in this case, let me just show you these movies. The morphology of the reconnection process, the morphology of the layer, what actually happens in it, is very different. Oh, look, see, it is very different. I don't know what happened here. But you can see it's very different from 3D, right? 3D and 3D. This is unexpected. Now, and you can see here that the difference between 3D and 2D is very large in terms of like the magnetic energy budget. In 3D case, for some reason, reconnection is slower, and the amount of energy dissipated is less than in 2D. Here and here, you can compare these things. And furthermore, if you look at what happens inside of this layer, it becomes turbulent, and it becomes very unmagnetized. In 2D case, you still have substantial fraction of energy left in the magnetic field in form of these plasmoids. But in 3D, these plasmoids are gone. Everything looks very different. And the amount of energy in the reconnected region, magnetic energy, is very small. And then finally, but the spectra of particles, remarkably, actually look very, very similar. So everything is different, right? The overall energetics is different. The way things look like, the structures are very different. But the particle spectra are not very different from each other. So you can see this here. This is 2D, and these are things that are 3D. In this case, these differences at high energies are emphasized by compensating by a large gamma factor, power of gamma factor here. Well, they are not exactly the same, but they are not that different either. And in fact, again, in agreement with what Mark said, in 3D, particle acceleration is actually a little bit more enhanced relative to 2D. And the reason for this, and in particular, it's enhanced at the highest energy, at the highest energy limit of particles. At low energies, they kind of, the differences are minor, but here they are very large. And the reason for this is that in 3D, particles are no longer, can be trapped in plasmoids. They escape from these plasmoids and get a chance to be reaccelerated further. And that pushes the pushes them to somewhat higher energy. Thank you. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you. Okay. Yes.
So 2D high sigma case.
2D high sigma case.
2C high sigma case. You add the guide field. The only dynamical effect of this guide field is just that it moves around, so you essentially add a heavy relativistic fluid, so you effectively reduce your sigma to less than 1. Is this the case?
I think this is precisely the case, and I didn't say it, but it's on the slide.
And then slide then it's just trivial, right? So well, you go back to very low sigma, and then...
Yeah, I mean, one could argue this, but there is indeed... So, indeed, this is what happens. In this, the sigma ought to be redefined in terms of what we call effective sigma h, which includes the enthalpy of the guide field in a proper way. I mean, there is a kind of more explanation than this single line. And then once you do this, and you plug this sigma h into the same formula that we, you know, this formula over here, right, without the effective, just sigma h, that formula was obtained from a totally different study. if you recall, I showed it for electron ion reconnection. This is for pair plasma reconnection, right? But if you just plug this expression into here, what you get is this green line that seems to be in agreement with these data points which correspond to 3D and 2D Pavlov indices for as a function of guide field. So that's actually indeed the case. Now, however, I have to say, in MHD, indeed, you would expect the guide field not to do much. But for some reason, that is not fully understood, at least by me, in kinetic, in plasma kinetic simulations, guide field has other effects. For example, it suppresses strongly the overall energetics, energy budget. The plasma becomes, so you see, when you have reconnection, you have these plasmoids forming, right, in 2D. And plasmoids contract. Guide field makes them more incompressible. It suppresses contraction of plasmoids. And I have to say that there is a difference between relativistic and non-relativistic plasmas here, because non-relativistic plasmas have adiabatic index of 5/3. Relativistic plasmas have an adiabatic index of 4/3. And it follows that they are more squeezable. So guide field sort of makes them less squeezable, less compressive. Maybe that's the reason, but I'm not sure.
There's another effect too, if I can just comment, and that is just going back to plain old MHD, when you have a guide field and you come in, there's usually a rotational discontinuity, and across that, the guide field gets compressed and increases, and that effectively converts the reconnected magnetic energy into the guide field energy.
Sure. Right. Well, actually, so in these studies, we didn't have, the guide field was uniform initially. But when you form plasmoids, you have to compress. You're compressing the plasma and you're compressing the guide field with it, right? But I'm saying that it resists compression in both cases, in relativistic and non-relativistic. But I think in the relativistic case, it has a stronger effect because the plasma is less compressible is more compressible in that case. But look at this. This is sort of puzzling. This is the amount of energy dissipated, not of the guide field, but of the reconnecting field in the XY plane, right, as a function of time. And you can see that for different guide fields, which correspond to different colors, you have different amounts of energy available. And it's a remarkable difference, right? Because what matters is not what matters is the difference between one and this value. So for guide field equal to one, you're only dissipating this amount of energy. For guide field equal to zero, it's three times more.
Okay. Yes.
I just make a few comments, but I think Jim probably won't make the same comment. So. One of the comments, if you look at in your analytic model, you have this acceleration rate. Mm-hmm. And you assume this is does not depend on energy. But if you look at the peak simulation, it does depend on energy. It's usually proportional to energy. I think your simulation does not consider, your analytical solution does not consider with peak simulation. And another piece of evidence is, let me finish.
Okay.
Another piece of evidence is if you run a very high sigma case, the limit of slope is actually minus one, which is evidence of Fermi acceleration. This is the hardest slope you can get from Fermi acceleration. But I guess other people will make similar comments on this.
So Bill wants to make a comment, right? Did you or no?
Mike,
I can. I mean, if it's on
this question.
Oh, you have a different question, because I saw you raising your hand just when he was talking. So I think, we may disagree, I don't know. That's why this analytical model is separate from numerical studies. It's not part of any numerical papers. And when I write it up eventually, and it's been around for 2 years, I haven't written it up yet. It provides the simplest explanation, and by the way, the one part of this explanation is consistent with Zenitani and Hoshino 2001. They had similar reasoning for some part of it. But what I'm trying to do there is, well, the question is, on what time scale do you measure acceleration?
Well, at any scale you want, you can measure this in pixels. This is actually routinely done.
Well, it cannot be larger than the electric field, right? I mean, the amount of acceleration has an upper limit because the electric field is basically constant. Okay, right. So I'm just saying this model, it is actually very different from all the Fermi acceleration. It may have a similar looking kinetic equation, but the ingredients there are different. And if you want to cast it in terms of Fermi acceleration, I think what the interpretation in that terms will be that the escape of particles is due to them being trapped in plasmoids. They're escaping the active acceleration region by being trapped in plasmoids. That's for me what escape means. And this is how the cutoff is established. Okay.
Yeah, you put up that picture of the fractal reconnection cartoon from Shibata, which is really kind of motivated by resistive MHD.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, in any of the applications of relativistic pair plasmas, is it really true that the large scale could evolve? Really could get reconnection in a resistive MHD description, or is it always a collisionless kinetic?
Sorry, say it again.
Do you actually expect the real applications of pair plasmas to ever be in a regime where the top layer would be a resistive MHD? In other words, are there sufficient collisions to actually ever set this up?
Or no, would it I don't always think be, it's... Sorry, it's not resistive. Sorry, I'm not sure what you mean. So this is MHD, this is peak, right? The point of showing them next to each other is to show that they actually look similar, right? That this idea of, you know, the hierarchy of plasmoids and current sheets applies to both models. I'm not saying that peak is the same as resistive MHD.
Really, the hierarchy there is starting in MHD, right, where you have some macro... like sweet Parker layer that then makes new current sheets and then it can go downward, right?
Right.
But kinetic can't do that, right? If
No. But the point.
Kinetic can build its way up like this if you're starting with a thin sheet.
With a thin sheet, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But the thing is that I'm not thinking about this as going in time, you know, from top to bottom. But just at any given time, what you see is a structure, a multi-scale structure. At any given time, if you take a look at a snapshot, this snapshot looks very similar to that snapshot, and they both look like where you have a sequence of small number of large plasmoids. Between large plasmoids, there is a layer. If you look at, if you smooth things out, this just looks like a layer. If you look with a microscope, you'll see that layer is, well, just precisely as this picture is, right? So that layer has smaller plasmoids between them layers that may in turn have smaller plasmoids, right? I mean, this is what seemed to be...
But the real happening. Applications would always be kinetic, collisionless reconnection.
Right, so I guess I see where you're coming from. Indeed, so as... of course, picture like this is from a simulation, which assumes resistive MHD, right, all the way down. And in that case, there is a well-defined... bottom of this hierarchy, so the well-defined scale at which the layers become marginally stable, the critical, right? Now, as you showed, I guess, in a real plasma, before you reach that scale, even if the layer on large scale is resistive MHD in the sense that the sweet Parker thickness is larger than kinetic scales, as you start going down this hierarchy, you will transition to kinetic scales before you reach the marginally stable sweet Parker layers. So that's certainly true. Yeah, yeah. Right. So in a real plasma, you will go to collision scales. Right.
You know. So Dima, I guess I'm curious to know how your results would apply to particle acceleration in turbulence, and specifically, you know, if as you go towards small scales in the inertial range, any reconnection events that you might find in turbulence are large guide field reconnection events. So would I be right to extrapolate and think that turbulence might be very inefficient at accelerating particles. In turbulence might be very inefficient.
Well, that's an excellent question. Indeed, it's an important question. In light of all these studies that you've done with Stas and Alex, with Ben and Alfred Mallet, of the role of reconnection as it develops in small sheets, current sheets that spontaneously arise as a result of dynamic alignment, right, in turbulence. Now, here I want to say two things. First of all, the person to ask is sitting behind you, and that's Vladimir, right? So he might know the answer to this. But also, Lorenzo Sironi, who is not here for some reason, and Luca Camisso, right? They've looked at this in the context of decaying turbulence. What they see is that particles that eventually get to high energies, that get accelerated, always go through a reconnection layer first. So somehow in those simulations, they were always energized through a reconnection layer embedded in turbulence. And then subsequent energization to higher energies occurs not through reconnection anymore, but through diffusive particle acceleration, which is also what we find in our studies.
Okay. Okay. Thanks for all the questions, and thanks to the speaker.
Thank you very much.
Very good.
Thank you.
And now we know all about relativistic reconnection.
Well, except for what Fashina-san is going to tell us. Okay. Okay.